This is episode 36 of Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration, and I am Roland Chidiac. I'm so fortunate to have been able to get to number 36, and my guest this evening, I was speaking to her moments before I hit record, and I was saying that I can't believe that I got through 35 episodes and didn't connect with this person earlier, but we'll explore that a little bit this evening, and you'll get to hear a little bit about the work that my guest does and the amazingness that she participates in with respect to blogging, with respect to using social media to leverage her reflections, to benefit her practice, benefit her student learning. So there's a lot of layers here that we could go at, and we'll see how it goes. So this evening on episode 36, I welcome Aviva Dunziger. Aviva, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. And like I said, 35 episodes have passed and you and I have not talked on the podcast. So I'm guilty of something. I'm not sure what to call it because there's a host of people that I would love to talk to. But the thing in my mind is that 35 episodes is a lot of my time and a lot of other people's time. And you and I, you're always available to connect on social media, and you and I've had some great discussions, and I've even watched you get into discussions with other people and seen blog posts come out of them and responses and other blog posts. Like it's cool what you're doing there. It's awesome that you help your colleagues reflect on their practice. So I'm really happy that I can have a little bit of time with you this evening. And let's start by having you tell us the work that you're currently doing right now.
I'm currently a kindergarten teacher. I switched schools for this year, so a slightly different school than I was at last year, much smaller school than I've been at probably in the last 15 years, so which is great. And I work with just amazing people within the school. I'm also the Portal Plus moderator for the Merit Center. So I've been working very closely with the Merit Center with Stuart Shanker and Susan Hopkins, and applying some new self-reg learning that I've been doing. I took the Foundations 1 course through them and continue to learn both through what I've been doing through Portal Plus, as well as through that particular course itself, and through different interactions as well through there, as well as through the TMC talks, which I try to chime in on once a month. And I've started to do a monthly blog post as well for the Merit Center. So I publish once a month on their blog on a topic of choice that connects with self-regulation. So that's really been my newest passion. And I think it was a group of students that I worked with last year as a kindergarten teacher. It really made me realize the importance of that, to really make learning and allow learning to happen and be successful. So I've been exploring it in terms of for the benefit of children, but also for the benefit of myself. So that's probably been my biggest thing right now.
Now, before you jumped into the world of kindergarten, you taught junior, correct?
Well, I actually started in kindergarten. So I taught kindergarten for 8 years, and I left kindergarten, moved up to grade 1, 1, 2, then 6 and 5, did some primary prep coverage, and then moved back down again. So I've kind of gone on a little bit of an up and then down.
So does it feel like home then to be in kindergarten?
It does. Strangely enough, I loved kindergarten, and I didn't leave kindergarten because I didn't love it. I left because I really didn't at the time embrace play-based learning. And so I knew where kindergarten was going with our new document and with the use of play-based learning, I really wasn't sure that I believed in it and saw the value in it for kids. And I wasn't sure if I could be a part of a program that I wasn't fully embracing. So I actually had to leave kindergarten to see the value in play-based and inquiry-based learning. And it was actually when I was up in junior that I saw the value in it and realized that I really wanted to go back down to kindergarten again.
And so it was last year, tell us a little bit about what got you into the whole work with self-regulation. Was it like, something, a pattern that you were seeing while you were working with the students, or was it just one moment something happened and it got you thinking about self-regulation, which led you down the road to the Merit Center?
Well, it's kind of a little bit funny. So what happened was I was teaching grade 5 at the time, and I knew at that point that I really wanted to go down to full day kindergarten. And in our board, they were running a Calm, Alert, and Learning book club, which is Stuart Shanker's big book for education. And they were running a book club through the board that they really, self-regulation is a huge part of the kindergarten program document. And so they really suggested that people that wanted to go into kindergarten looked at being a part of the book club. And one of the book clubs was running out of our school at the time. So I thought, I want to be in kindergarten. I want to show my principal and vice principal that, you know what, I really, I'm really dedicated to this. So I thought, I'm going to join this book club. I'm going to read this book. I even offered to help be one of the facilitators for the book club to kind of show that I was passionate about going back down to kindergarten. And to be honest, at the time, and I've said this before, I wasn't so sure I bought into this self-regulation stuff. I thought it was just kind of like the words that we use, but I wasn't so sure I really believed in it. But I thought, I'm going to give it a try and I'm going to see. So I joined the book club and I started to read the book, and it totally changed me. And I started to blog on my blog about my reading each week, because we were encouraged to keep a journal as part of this book club. And I'm not so good with paper and a pen. So I thought I would use my blog as that journal. And at the time, it's kind of funny because I used Twitter to connect with people after I had blogged. And I mentioned Stuart Shanker on a couple of those blog posts. And he started to read my work and he started to connect with me through there. And so we kind of made a connection at that point. And then a couple of years ago, I moved from what would be a higher income school in our board, probably even maybe one of the highest income ones in our board, to probably one of the lowest income schools in our board. And there was a lot more poverty, a much bigger ESL population, lots of other issues. And I started to see those needs with self-regulation and what some students were missing in order to be able to really learn. And so I got even more passionate about it and started to teach groups of students where I realized that there were these needs that were there. And so for my benefit, as well as for the students, I needed to really look at self-regulation differently. And that's when I decided to take the course through the Merit Center, the Foundations course. And that's when I started to get more involved with the Merit Center at that point, and become the Portal Plus moderator stuff, and really start to look a lot more passionately about it in the last couple of years because of that change.
Yeah, I enjoy the journey and you telling us about it, how you got there. And I want to share with you the first time I kind of heard you talking about self-regulation in a more serious way. It was really neat for me because, so basically, for people who don't know, I have met you a couple of times, but generally speaking, most of my interaction with you has been over social media. And I have to say that when I have met you face to face, it's been pretty awesome for me. Okay. So I just want to put that out there. Because it was neat to actually get to meet the person with all these amazing ideas and very open to assisting others and working with others. So anyway, that's my bit of like a Viva celebrity thing going on. But okay, so back to self-regulation. So knowing how intense you are with the things that you're doing and knowing how reflective you are. When I started hearing you tweet, when I started seeing you tweet about self-regulation, you piqued my interest. I started to think, okay, I want to see kind of what she's doing here. Where did this come from? What's Aviva trying to do? What's she working towards? And it's really cool because you got me kind of interested in the topic. And I remember you and Jonathan So were going back and forth, talking about self-regulation, and the things you were saying really got me thinking about my practice, what self-regulation looks like in my classroom, how I deal with things that maybe I see in a different way because I don't have, or I didn't have, the same kind of understanding that you had at that time with respect to self-regulation. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is that because of your track record and your credibility, in my opinion, you've helped me kind of take a step back and look at that as well in a non-threatening way. So I appreciate that. And I think it's very important what you're doing and the things you're reading about and working with. And just the two or three things that we've gone back and forth, and I've read some of your blog posts, got me thinking about situations in my room around the use of technology with my students and how it can upset their self-regulation, how it can assist them with their self-regulation. So, you know, just from these tweets and blog posts, you've allowed me to learn a little bit more about it with respect to what I do and where my interests are. And I can't be the only one. I'm sure there's many people. It just so happens that we're talking this evening. So thank you for explaining your journey, and thank you for providing people with an approach that doesn't leave them feeling like they've done something wrong. Like the way you approach things and the way you deal with people is very open and very inviting.
Oh, well, thank you.
Have you heard that before?
Well, you know what? Yes and no, I guess. I mean, I feel like you're always, like, you're so kind. You're so kind when we've met in person. You're so kind online, and just, you kind of give like that warm, fuzzy feeling, I guess, which is nice at the end of a day too, right? So, but you're very supportive and stuff too. And it is much appreciated, but it's wonderful to hear about how some of the reflections and the things that, you know, that I've shared has made that impact. Because you don't always get a chance to hear that. And it just reminds me of the importance of sharing those things when those things do happen, right? Because it's it can be very powerful to hear those things. So thank you.
Well, you talk about, no, you're welcome. You talk about having a long day. And I know your days are packed. And like I said, I've seen your tweets about the time you spend writing report cards and the time you spend blogging and the time you spend working with other people. Like, you know, it's funny because people say, like, how do you know if any of this is true? And I'm like, well, if this Aviva lady's not true, then she's like spending all her time doing weird things and trying to make us all think that that's what she's doing. Like, give me a break. But I wanted to say, oh man, I lost it. We were talking about, oh, okay. So you said those nice things about me, and that's very kind of you as well. But let's get to the heart of, what motivates you? Like, what inspires you to do what you're doing, to put in those hours, to spend a lot of time reflecting and planning? What motivates you to do those things?
It's going to sound so strange, I guess, but it's totally like the kids. It's 100% the kids, because nothing makes me happier than seeing those kids and seeing the growth, or knowing that you've gotten to that child who's had, you know, some difficulty in that spark. And it's like, it's so exciting. It's in the midst of it all. It is just so exciting. Like, my teaching partner and I had that discussion today when we saw like this totally different child since September. And it just, like, it just clicked. And like, honestly, like I just couldn't get enough of just sitting back and watching this today and thinking, like, all of that time, all of the effort, all of the different approaches, all of the different things we've tried to reflect on and try something new with has, like, it's worked and there's growth and it is unbelievably exciting. And it is totally the students that motivate me, right? Like I can't get enough of seeing that. And I mean, I guess the other piece is, I mean, I work with such an incredible teaching partner. Like I honestly cannot say enough about Paula. I feel so fortunate. I worked with an amazing teaching partner last year too, and was very sad to leave her. And that was partially the reason behind also like leaving the school. She was leaving as well. And it seemed like the right time, but I'm so fortunate to work with somebody who constantly like pushes my thinking, engages in dialogue, like she inspires me to keep going, to try something new. Like, you know, we talk about a lot of the blog posts I write before I write them. I'm like, I've got to sit down and write that tonight. But I think it's those combinations of the kids and the partner that makes like a huge difference.
Yeah, it doesn't sound strange to me at all when you say it's the kids and the partner. It doesn't sound strange at all because the kids are huge for many teachers, but the partner thing, that is crazy. Like I've been doing this for 16 years and I've had lots of partners and they've all been good, fine, but there have been a couple that I've really fit in with perfect, where they get me and I get them. And it's just the perfect combination for that year or two that it happens. So it doesn't sound strange, but tell me, I'd love to know, have you always wanted to be a teacher?
Always, like probably since grade two. And that was like a huge motivating factor for me and everything. Like even as someone who struggled in school, a huge factor was I wanted to teach. That was like 100% my goal. My parents are in education. Like I grew up with people in education. My uncle was a teacher. Like, and I've just always wanted to teach. I used to teach the dolls and now I wanted a group of kids to teach. Right. And like, and for me, I'm like totally like living my dream. Like I love it. I can't imagine doing anything different than it. I don't want a job outside of it. I love the classroom. I love the students. I love the parents and the community and just, I love to teach.
Oh, great. Yeah, it sounds good. I wanted to know if it was always kind of on your mind, and it sounds like it was, and it sounds like it's a bit of a family business. You mentioned that you struggled in school.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I was identified with a nonverbal learning disability in visual spatial skills when I was in grade two. And I was actually told by the psychologist at the time that I would never make it to university, that the gap was just too large between verbal and nonverbal, and that I really needed to reconsider what my options were. And I'm very thankful for my parents, my stepdad, who was a resource teacher at the time and had a big background in spec ed, my mom, who is now a retired speech and language pathologist, who really worked with me to determine some strategies that worked. And I've always, you know what, I've always put lots of time into things I've done. And but it was totally like additional time, strategies that worked, self-advocacy, and just learning how to advocate for myself and what I needed, and being able to, you know, talk to teachers and tell them the kinds of things that I needed to succeed. And I worked through it. And my sister was 13 months younger than me, and she skipped grade one, so we went through school together. And she was gifted, so it was always like working with a, like there was always that student who was always kind of in either the same class or at least the same grade as me, who was finding things so easy that I was struggling with. But I was very determined, like I wanted to teach. And I think that is a little bit of the motivating factor behind things for me too, because I am a big believer that anyone can learn. And it just, it doesn't sit well with me when a child is struggling and it's just not working. I'm like, something has to change. I've got to change something. That child is going to be able to do it. And that is a huge motivating thing for me. So it doesn't matter, like I have 32 kindergarten students right now. If 31 of them are doing wonderfully, but one child is struggling, that's the one who's gonna we're gonna keep coming back to, because I'm determined that those 32 are going to
So
make
you're
it.
told, right. You're told as a child that what you want to do is not going to be possible. And but you were determined. Like that was, so that's a characteristic of yours that you've always kind of had.
Yeah, I think so. That kind of drive. I mean, I think it, I like when I look at my parents, when I look at my mom in particular, too. My mom and my dad, but my mom for sure, there is certainly that piece of her too, right? She like very hard worker, very determined, not going to give up, going to invest the time. And I feel like it was a bit of an inherited trait, right? And so and I was also lucky to have a background with parents who were in spec ed, who understood what the needs were and were able to provide some strategies and supports. And while the learning disability itself is quite significant, my strengths on the other side are also quite strong. So I was able to use those strengths to kind of combat the learning disability too.
Does your disability, does it, number one, does it still exist? And number two, if it does still exist, is it not even a factor anymore because you know how to like balance things out on the other end?
Yeah, so it does still exist. Well, I mean, I haven't had a recent the last psych assessment I had done was before I went to university, right? So, but it would do with like the little parking tweets that are also funny, right? Like the ability for me, it's visual spatial, right? So that spatial sense of being able to get into that parking spot, it kind of overlaps. Still can't read a map. Every year that I find out where my new classroom is going to be, I need to ask the principal to just direct me there because there's no way I can read that map without the directions and things like that. So there are certainly the pieces of it. I'm still the person that struggles with the Tanagram puzzles and stuff like that because of being able to see it. I'm the one when I taught grade six who like needed to be talked through by my teaching partner like multiple times on how to do like translations and rotations and stuff because I just could not visualize it. But that being said, I have learned strategies, and in some ways, being that child that does struggle, and because I have learned strategies that work, I am the one who can think of the child that might struggle, right? So because I am that person, right? So I can then put into place some of those strategies or brainstorm what possible strategies might be. So I don't know that a learning disability ever goes away, but I do think as you grow up, especially if you don't let it stop you, I think you start to learn strategies that work for you and you can put them into place and you can make decisions and or ask for supports and stuff in place. And for me, I think self-regulation has also really benefited me because one part for people with a nonverbal learning disability is some social interaction stuff is really challenging, right? So a lot of the self-regulation strategies that I've learned that support students within the classroom or that students tend to use are ones that also support me, right? So there's benefits to that as well. So I think it's also helped me. It makes me kind of wonder if that would have helped me as I was growing up as well, too, right?
It's sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm good.
It's just you said so many things there that I could jump onto. I think the main thing is that you're in such a perfect position to help kids, in teaching basically, because I don't know about you, but I've sat in on a couple of spec ed meetings where I've witnessed a psychologist tell a parent that their child had something and that what it was going to stop them from doing. And every time I've sat in those meetings, they just kill me, because you've got one professional providing information to a parent about what their evaluation based on their assessment. And I'm sitting there biting my tongue because, like you, I've had lots of barriers in my way as well. But here I am today in a position where nobody would have ever thought I would be in. And it's like, okay, so you've got this bump in the road. It doesn't mean your life's over. You got to focus and you got to plan and you got to move towards that goal, whatever it is, and not really let these things stop you. You know what I mean? I know you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I think you're in the perfect position to be doing what you're doing because of your experience. But I also want to say that based on the amount of time I've known you and seen you face to face, you appear to have a great sense of humor. You always seem to be laughing. You always seem to be smiling. That's got to be a huge advantage in the work you do and the way you deal with your issues.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and again, like, I credit my parents a lot for that as well, right? And that's something, I mean, my relatives too, like, they all have a really good sense of humor. That's something that's helped a lot. And it's a strategy that I use a lot for myself as well. But I also think, I think laughter helps make us feel better, right? Like, it's, and that's something something I love about kindergarten as well is the number of times during the day that I'm able to just have a really good laugh with kids is wonderful. Like, I mean, we should all be able to do that, right? And I think it does make a huge, huge difference for us, too.
I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I've been saying it a lot lately. Oh, I was at a PD about a week and a half ago, and I was talking with some teachers about the amount of time I've been spending in kindergarten these days. And it's not to say that my class is draining me, so to speak, but I've just found myself down there kind of watching them, talking with them, listening to them. And it's really refreshing. Like, it's different. The whole environment's different. You know, I love that they can bring their coats and boots actually into the classroom. That's kind of neat because all their stuff's hung up there right in the room. But, you know, the last time I was in there, I just sat down with a couple of kids who were having a snack and I just started talking to them. It was so neat to have that interaction with 4 and 5 year olds. So I've been spending a lot of time down there just because of what you're saying. It's a different thing. Having a laugh with them is a little bit different. It kind of refreshes me. I've mentioned it to my students. I've said to them, like, I just spent some of my planning time in kindergarten. And you know what they say to me? They say, how come we can't go with you?
There you go.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, we can do that. We can make that happen. We have spent some time with our kindergarten friends and it's refreshing and it's just a different perspective because I think I'm teaching grade 4 or 5 this year and it gets serious at times. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of kids in the room. So there's, you know, some classroom management that needs to go on often. And there's some self-regulation that needs to be happening that's not. So it's just different to go down there and see what it's about when you don't have to do it full time. Because, you know, has it been a shock to your system to go back, even though you started there? Was it a shock to go from 6 back down to kindergarten?
Thankfully, I did have a grade 1 as a middle point, right? So I did that first before I went. So I went from 5 to 1 before going back to kindergarten. So that was when I knew I really wanted that piece. I had moved schools at that point and it was the grade 1 that was available. I mean, it is a little bit different. My junior experience was different too, because I had taught almost all of those students in kindergarten. And for some of them, I had taught them in like kindergarten grade 1 and grade 2. And then again, in like grade 5 and grade 6. So like, again, when you're talking about things like classroom management and things like that, that definitely come up. The connections, again, with kids, I think makes the huge difference, right? And the relationships you've developed with kids when you've taught them over multiple years makes a big difference too. It is definitely This year is a little different because last year when I taught kindergarten, different group of students for sure, but much smaller groups. So, and a much bigger classroom. So I had a bigger classroom in like 23 or 24 students over the course of the year. This year, our classroom is smaller and we have 32 students. And our class is also connected to another classroom without a full wall in between us. So we have 66 kindergarten children that are all like right there. So between the two of us and we do have, as you said, like coats in the room, but it's actually a coat, like a cubby area at the back of our space that's also shared between those 66 kids. So noise and stuff is always like, that's something I really had to get accustomed to it. It's why we love our outdoor learning time. It's why we spend over an hour outside in the morning every day and mm-hmm. sometimes go out at other points during the day, sometimes with a smaller group, sometimes with the whole class. It's a whole different environment out there. And I mean, we're so fortunate because we connect right to a forest. So, and we have an amazing outdoor classroom space as well, but just such a large area for students to explore. And it's a whole different environment out there. And I do think those numbers, I think you have to play. I mean, I think the numbers are a bit of a reality, no matter what people discuss or what the, you know, what the cap things that they look at are, could or might be. I think bigger numbers are certainly a bit of a shock. It's getting used to that and getting used to kind of constant noise and what that sounds like in the classroom and what you can live with and what you can't live with and how do you teach kids to bring the volume down a little bit. How do you deal with things like running, right? So especially kids who are developmentally maybe not at a 4 or 5 year old level, but at a 2 or 3 year old level, they love to run. Open space leads to running, right? So it's also classroom design to limit the running, right? It's putting things like pillows and stuff on the floor in between with some books to just stop that, because it's very developmentally appropriate, but it's not something you're not looking for kids to like be in a race around the class, right? So there's mm-hmm. there's lots of different things that have certainly been getting accustomed to. And for me this year, I think the noise was the biggest part, because I do find lots of noise to be difficult to deal with. So that has been one of the biggest adjustments. But I notice a big difference with the kids now too, right? So as the year goes on, things settle a bit and maybe you forget a little bit about what it was like back in September when it all started, right? So,
right. And I find, the September thing, if I could make September go away and I could just jump from the first day to the beginning or the middle of October, you could sign me up for that, because September, you know, it's tough for kids. I don't know about other teachers, but it's really tough for me. Like, I really don't like the first month of school because of everything that has to happen in that month. But I hear what you're saying. And I really appreciate you sharing information about, you know, classroom design and what you can and can't live with. All those things are very important. And all those things are considerations that each individual has to deal with. Some people don't mind the noise at all. Some people can't have any noise at all. I'm finding like I'm right in the middle. I tell my kids, you know what? It's getting out of hand, and I'll tell them why I feel it's getting out of hand and what it's doing to me. And if it's doing it to me, it's probably doing it to other people too. And so we need to kind of remember that. But also design's important. Yeah. You know, now like I've been using right outside my room, I've been using the hallway a lot. I've been using a back room that I have just to kind of break things up, and I can still supervise everybody, but we're not all just central where there's just constant buzzing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know it. You know what? It's, as you say it, it's the exact thing that my teaching partner and I talk about like throughout the day. It's all in how students use the space, right? And that's why we're always very cognizant on if they're using that whole space or if there's areas of the room that are not being used and what we have to put mm-hmm. there to help spread it out. Because if you have too many people in one area, your noise level's going up no matter what area that is, mm-hmm. right? So
I have written, okay, so I take notes while I'm talking to my guest, and I've got the word coffee with two exclamation marks behind it, and it's underlined twice because I believe that I've read several times that coffee's important to you. You enjoy your coffee. Is this true?
It is very true. I love coffee. Absolutely. It gets me through
so
my
are you
day.
Like, are you a person who likes to try different types of coffee, or is it just coffee in general? You just really enjoy it and it helps you out.
You know what? I will drink any coffee. I do like a really good cup of coffee. I prefer like a stronger blend. I always like trying different types of coffee, but when push comes to shove, I'm not that picky. I need to start my day off with coffee. I get a major migraine if I don't. So, yeah.
Okay. So I'm not a coffee drinker at all. And in fact, the only time I really drink coffee is when the family goes out for breakfast and I will order a coffee. And it's funny because my kids look at me like, "What are you doing, Dad?" And I just say to them, "You know what? Daddy never really has coffee. So he's going to have one today." And I don't know why I never got into it, but I know that it's a big thing for you, or at least that's how it comes across over social media. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah, I never actually talked to you
about it and to hear your perspective.
I never actually drank coffee until I was in university. And then not until I was in like my third year of university and was with a roommate who had a Bodum for the coffee and like the French presses, and used to constantly make the coffee, and it was like really good quality coffee. That's when I got accustomed to drinking it. And now I try not to drink it at night most times. So because I do find it really impacts on my ability to go to sleep. So rarely. Last night I had a meeting. I was at a school council meeting and I had a headache before I started the meeting. So I did stop for coffee, which meant I did not have a good night's sleep last night. But most times I only drink it in the day and like in the morning. So a couple of coffees in the morning. On the weekend, I might have one in the afternoon as well. But I do enjoy it, and it does become a tweet every once in a while on the coffee.
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm looking at your Twitter page right now, and the picture of you is a picture of you with a coffee cup right in front of you.
Yes. Yes, it seemed appropriate. I think Doug Peterson has had quite the conversations with me on the coffee before. So every time I replace that Twitter picture, it still tends to involve a coffee cup. One of my vices, I guess.
That's fair. That's totally fair. I want to kind of move on and get back into like a little bit of a serious mode here. And I can't say we've been totally serious in this conversation, but it's been good. You've been sharing a lot of things you do and, you know, kind of your philosophy on teaching and stuff like that and what motivates you. I kind of want to shift gears and I want to talk a little bit about and hear your perspective on how you might help others become motivated or inspired. And basically it's, you know, when you're with someone or working with someone and they look to you for advice, what would you say to them to help them find motivation or inspiration?
Well, I mean, I think motivation and inspiration, I think it's a hard thing because I think part of it needs to come like deep from you, right? Like it's gotta be something that you're passionate about. I am often reluctant to give a lot of advice. I learned from an old vice principal of mine, Christy Curie Bishop, who I do interact with quite a bit on social media as well. And I learned a lot from her about the value in like that good question, like that hard question. And I tend to use questioning more as a way to maybe get people to think a little bit. So instead of maybe giving the advice, I might be more apt to ask the question, you know, why aren't you doing this? Or what might make things better? Or what could make you happier? And get people to maybe find that peace from within, because I think in the long run, if you're going to continue on a track, if you're going to invest the time, and I know you're talking to me a lot about like time invested and the time we put into things, but I mean, I watch the kinds of things that you do. I watch the kinds of things of people I interact with online, like just about everybody on Twitter. When I look at the amount of time, like we're interacting with people who do put a lot of time and effort into education and really do seem to consider it way more than just a job. And I think that that has, I think part of that drive has to really come from within. And I'm not sure if I'd be as apt to offer advice as I would be to maybe offer the question that might inspire the advice.
I appreciate that. And I think that you taking the time to be considerate and to ask the person questions is going to lead them to something. It's going to give them something to reflect on, whether they like what you're doing with them or not. So I guess your approach generally is to just kind of help them find it somehow, because you said something about it having to come from them. So do you think that, okay, well, what do you think is holding them back from whatever it is deep down inside of them that they need to reach in and get?
Yeah, like I don't know. I you know what? I think part of it, sometimes it might be time invested. Sometimes it might be fear, right? Like I think about a lot with regards to, say, the full-day kindergarten program. I think about if we're really trying to implement this play-based learning program where we're starting, like if we're truly following what the document says and we're starting with what the kids are interested in and listening to them and then making links to expectations, I think there is a big fear, and it's a fear I've dealt with too. Like, what happens if I miss something? What happens if the kids don't get there? What happens if they don't get there fast enough? What happens if, you know, there's a chunk that I should have been pushing earlier on? Am I doing someone a disservice by not doing this first? And I think sometimes it's all of that that can hold people back. And I try, like, I do try to understand all of those things too, because I get it. Like I know what I've been trying to work through to get to the point where I'm at. So I get why that can sometimes hold people back. And I think that's why we sometimes have to ask the questions, because it's so easy to maybe infer what the problem is or what the what's stopping people, where maybe we're missing it because without asking the question, we're not really sure on what the holdup is.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for letting me kind of push you with that, because I wanted to see what you'd say, and not like in a negative way or anything, but I think you're right. I think people know what they want, but things get in the way. Like you said, fear. A big one is what other people might think of them or how other people might react to them. That's a big one too. Like, for example, that's one I'm trying to let go of within me, and just do what I need to do to feel good or to help someone else accomplish whatever goal it is that they want to reach.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you for that. We are coming close to the end of our chat together, but before we go, can you please tell people how they can connect with you if they want to?
Yeah, so probably the easiest way is if people are on Twitter, is at Aviva Loca on Twitter. Then there's always my blog, A Dunsiger, DUNSIGER.com. And people can also, if they want to email, dunsiger@yahoo.com is probably the easiest email option.
Well, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to sharing this with other people. It's been a great conversation with you. And like, you know, always so gracious with your time. When I hit you up and asked you if you wanted to connect, you were totally into it. And so I appreciate how easy you made it for me to be able to you know, connect with you and have a conversation. I look forward to continuing to read your tweets. I look forward to seeing you at EdTech conferences and other things like that. So it's always a pleasure. And I appreciate you taking the time to chat.
Oh, well, thank you so much for the opportunity. And it's always nice talking to you, Roland. So I'm glad we were able to connect. Thank you.
Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your evening.